all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Back at 7:06 on this Tuesday morning, April 16th. Nice to have you along. A busy hour ahead. We're going to hear from Amanda Zarowski coming up in just moments, talking about her experience with a troubled pregnancy and the impact of abortion bans in states like Texas. In our second half hour, we will talk to Hans Breitenmoser, dairy farmer from up in Lincoln County, and we're going to talk about farm exports and why a Western Wisconsin congressman seems to be making noise about wanting to cut off a key export market for American farmers and for Wisconsin producers. We'll hear from Chad Holmes coming up a little bit later on his show that follows next on Bull Falls Radio up in Wausau here on the Civic Media Radio Network. But first, we get a check of the forecast as we head into a day that promises to be gusty, putting it mildly, and rainy as well. Meteorologist Brittany Merlo has details. Brittany, good morning.
Good morning, everyone. So, yes, we have a huge low-pressure system that is starting to take off and head our way. So what's going to be happening throughout our afternoon is clouds increasing. So first things first, we're seeing sunshine out there right now. It looks pretty nice. Temperatures are in the 40s. Winds aren't too bad. They're gusting up to about 20 miles per hour at this point under partly sunny skies. Clouds will start to increase. And then the main event isn't going to hit until about 4 to 5 p.m. That's when we're going to start to see some of those stronger winds push on in, gusting up to 30 to 40 miles per hour, and then the rain's going to follow. So I really think a good chance of the stronger storms, especially into southern parts of the state, are going to be after 5 p.m. And what I believe is going to happen with this system is we're going to get an initial wave of rain and storms. There's going to be the heavy rain. We're going to get downpours of about a half an inch to maybe 3/4 of an inch at first. And then we're going to see a little break in between. And then the next round of storms, especially down in towards Crawford, Vernon, Dane County area, you are in a higher risk for severe storms. The second round, I think, is when some of those storms are going to produce some large hail and even a tornado or two. Now, keep an eye on the forecast, on what's going on, because any tornado-worn storm that does form into Iowa or Illinois, as they head northeast, it could push into parts of our state. So this evening is going to be a dangerous one, especially after sunset. Any storms like that, pay attention, be careful out there, because this is packing a punch statewide. We're all going to have the chance to see 50-mile-per-hour winds. The winds way up high are so, so strong. And with these heavy downpours, it's going to be able to pull those winds to the surface. And if that happens, and it looks like it is, a good chunk of the state is going to see sustained, that means a constant wind at 30 miles an hour and gusts up to 40 to 50. So that's going to put out power. That's going to blow unsecured objects around. That's a lot.
I am reminded of the line from comedian Ron White. It's not that the wind is blowing. It's what the wind is blowing, and let's not take a trash can lid to the face or something like that today, okay? Be careful out there. Brittany Merlo, thank you so much. Stay on top of things and keep us on the update. Talk
Will
to you
do.
Later.
Thank
All
you.
All right, thank you. Just about 7:10 right now. One of the top issues, of course, in the presidential election and elections all across Wisconsin and the country deals with women's reproductive health care rights. And as we know from our many conversations on this program, there was a lot about abortion care that was just simply not talked about prior to the repeal of Roe v. Wade. And it was only afterwards that some of these conversations became more essential, less uncomfortable about how women's choices aren't just around elective abortions, but around troubled pregnancies, around fertility treatments and things like that. And we're only now, of course, learning of the dire consequences of what has happened since former President Donald Trump put three right-wing justices on the Supreme Court and had them repeal Roe v. Wade. Amanda Zarowski of Texas is one of the women who has been traveling around the country sharing her story, something that She was aware of what was happening in the news, but could not know at the time the very real life impact it would have on her. And it's a cautionary tale that she is sharing with others. Amanda, thank you so much for being part of the show today, joining us by phone. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me. And thanks to Wisconsin for welcoming me to your great state.
Yes, we understand you were speaking in Menominee Falls. Was that last evening that you were there?
Yep, that was last night, and we're also visiting Milwaukee and Eau Claire and Madison.
Yeah, so I've seen the coverage of you visiting some other key states as part of the election here. And so I wonder if you'd take just a couple of minutes just to give the background of what you had to go through with a pregnancy that you wanted. Again, it's a common theme we talk about here, that what happens to women who want to start a family, but, you know, things happen. What was it that had happened to you during your planned pregnancy?
Yeah, you're exactly right. So it was August 2022, and I was just shy of 18 weeks pregnant. And this is my first pregnancy. My husband and I were absolutely over the moon to be expecting. I had actually undergone about a year and a half of fertility treatment. So this was a baby we desperately wanted. And everything was going along nicely in the first trimester, but then just shy of 18 weeks, I developed complications and started dilating prematurely. And my doctor said that I was so far along that there was absolutely nothing they could do to reverse course safely. And so we got the harrowing news that we were going to lose the baby. So that in and of itself is devastating enough. But because Texas has a near total abortion ban, my doctors couldn't induce labor because the baby's heart was still beating. And so that would have been considered an illegal abortion. So one of the only exceptions in Texas is for life of the mother. And so we had to just wait until I got sick enough that my life was considered at risk. At that point, they could induce labor and I could deliver. And for me, what happened was I actually went into septic shock, waiting to get sick enough so that they could induce labor.
This is something that, again, we talked about in theory early on. And then, of course, since then, we've had this happen with Wisconsin women as well. And I don't mean to make you dwell on this, though I'm sure you've talked about this repeatedly. But during that interim period where it just wasn't clear that you could get the exact healthcare option that you needed, this had to be just a terrifying time.
It was absolutely terrifying. You know, I should have been able to begin the grieving process. I should have been able to start healing physically and emotionally, but instead I just had to wait in fear and anxiety in the unknown. And like I said, this was my first pregnancy. I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know how sick I might get. And it was just the most terrifying 3 days of my life.
Three days of this happening. And, you know, we frequently have on here Dr. Kristen Lyerly, who's an OBGYN, who's now running for Congress in the Green Bay area, is a frequent guest of the show. Regular listeners know that my wife is an OBGYN here in Northwest Wisconsin. And in talking to them about this, we were focusing on your feeling of helplessness, which is only right. But they, too, wanted to share the sense of what doctors, nurses, other providers are going through when they can't do the job that they think is right because of what some other politician somewhere said. And I'm sure you got that sense from some of the people that really wanted to take as good a care of you as possible.
Oh, you're exactly right. I am very close to my OB and my entire healthcare team. I was in and out of the ER several times during those 3 days, was turned away multiple times. Had a number of, you know, on-call ER docs, MFMs, OBs, residents, nurses, techs, I mean, the whole gamut. And everybody, you could just tell they were completely gutted that they couldn't help. But what do you expect? Of course they can't. They are facing loss of their license, jail time, hundreds of thousands of dollars in fines. I mean, it's just an impossible position that we're putting our healthcare providers in because of these bans in states like Texas.
And now for you to add, you know, insult to injury, is this ruling by the Alabama Supreme Court on IVF and fertilized embryos, or fertilized eggs, embryos having personhood status. And you were using IVF as part of this. So, I mean, that ruling had an impact on you as well, right?
Yeah, we have. So because of what happened to me, because of the sepsis, it caused such severe permanent damage to my reproductive organs that my doctor advised that we go directly to IVF and probably use a surrogate moving forward. And so we're very fortunate. We have two embryos. They were in Texas. And when that Alabama ruling came out, my husband and I, again, were terrified because the political landscape in Alabama is very similar to Texas. And so we thought, you know, if this can happen in Alabama, certainly it can happen in Texas. And so we moved our embryos out of state somewhere that we felt they'd be safer. But, you know, the damage is done. And thinking about those families in Alabama that were without IVF services for days is just absolutely heartbreaking.
So you're sharing, you know, these stories, these real life experiences with people around the country. And how would you sum up why you are putting yourself in the public eye after a tragic time, something that's never easy for anybody, but you have decided to take that step, and why? What are you telling folks in Menominee Falls last night across Wisconsin for the next couple of days?
You know, when I'm out here telling my story, I'm really telling the story of all of the women across the country who this has happened to and all of the women who are afraid this will happen to them. What happened to me was absolutely barbaric, but it was preventable and it didn't need to happen. It happened because of Donald Trump, because he overturned Roe v. Wade and gave the states the power to pass these draconian bans. And, you know, it's really a warning that I'm trying to signal across the country that this is happening. This is real. It can happen in Wisconsin. It can happen in any state if Trump is reelected, because we know that he'll support a national abortion ban no matter what he's saying today. His track record has showed that he will sign a national abortion ban, and this is what's going to be the consequence. This will be the case in every single state, and people are going to suffer if we don't do something about it.
They will. It was something that you couldn't possibly have foreseen, and now you're just trying to keep that from happening to other women, to other families. Amanda Zarowski, thank you so much for your time. Safe travels to you as you come up here toward the Chippewa Valley and around the state and around the country. We appreciate your time. Wish you safe travels and all the best. Thank you, Amanda.
Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. Nice to have you here. When we come back, we'll unpack more of the news. And then later, Hans Breitenmoser, Chad Holmes, and more still ahead. Wherever you're listening to Cross Wisconsin, when you're here, you're up north, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Everybody loves somebody sometimes. Everybody falls in love somehow.
There's old Dean, who needed one more song for his album this day in 1964, and took a Frank Sinatra tune from 1948, restyled it, and Everybody Loves Somebody became his theme song, and it went to number one in 1964. Hey, when the workday is over, there's still plenty going on across the Civic Media Radio Network, so be sure you're listening in for Busted Pencils, Educated Educators talking about education. You've got Nightlight with Pete Schwabe, Native Roots Radio, all that and more part of the weeknight lineup on the Civic Media Radio Network. Meanwhile, over at Up North News and Courier Newsroom, we've, as always, invite you to sign up for our newsletter. Go to upnorthnewswi.com and sign up there. Also, in today's newsletter, there is a getaway guide to Lake Geneva. And we always get teased about, you know, well, you're called Up North News, so shouldn't you just be covering things, you know, like north of 29? Like, no. It's Wisconsin. Wisconsin is America's up north. There are people who, for them, Lake Geneva is up north. And for those folks, we have a Lake Geneva getaway guide in today's newsletter. We also have a story about a downtown Milwaukee bar that is going to be closing during the Republican National Convention, and the owner explains why. over on the website, upnorthnewswi.com. We talked to Senator Kelda Royce recently on the program about not allowing Donald Trump to get away with trying to sound moderate on abortion rights when, as you certainly heard from Amanda in our last segment, he is anything but. On social media, there's a link to an article about President Biden canceling student loan debt for another 4,000 people across Wisconsin. And then finally, Earth Day is coming up, and so there are some ideas for planting some native Wisconsin flowers to mark Earth Day. So all that and more in the newsletter on the website over at Up North News. Among some of the other headlines to share today include how the things that Donald Trump is saying continue to have to do real world harm and have real impact for the potential for harm. And that would include for the state's top elections official, Megan Wolf, the administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. Again, a widely respected national expert on keeping elections safe and accurate and well-maintained. But because Donald Trump continues to lie about losing the election and trying to pin the blame for his loss on anybody other than himself, Megan Wolf has been put through the ringer trying to be fired by sycophantic Republicans who just want to do whatever Donald Trump says. And she's faced threats of and other, you know, hostile crowds, hostile people at times. And so she is now receiving heightened security. Governor Tony Evers' office would not confirm how long Wolf has received the extra security, according to an article in Wisconsin Public Radio. It does have a Elections Commission spokesperson, Riley Vetterkind, saying in a statement that the Elections Commission has had productive conversations about safety and security with state leadership. These conversations have resulted in additional security measures. Because, again, over the past nearly 4 years, there continue to be threats that are made that come in, some vague, some specific. And this is the world that we live in so long as we tolerate the kinds of things that Donald Trump is doing, the kinds of rhetoric that we talked about on the program last week with retired D.C. police officer Michael Fanone, one of the many law enforcement officers who were attacked and beaten on January 6th at the Capitol, at a violent insurrection, not a bunch of tourists just walking around. Again, real-world implications from the big lie that continues to be told. Today marks 286 days since Governor Tony Evers signed the state budget. The state budget should be the final word on how money is allocated from state government to take care of a whole host of needs, not the least of which, cleaning up our drinking water, which is increasingly found to be contaminated with all kinds of industrial chemicals, all coming under the acronym PFAS, P-F-A-S. The budget includes much money, $125 million for cleanup. And yet not a dime of it has been allocated these past 286 days because Republicans want to attach strings that would protect some of the polluters and would tie the hands of the DNR from going after polluters and make sure that they foot part of the bill or all of the bill for cleanup rather than just taxpayers. It's something that Governor Tony Evers has requested multiple times, that Republicans simply release the funds and let the DNR do their job. Republicans have refused. Governor Evers, multiple times in office, has called the legislature into special session to deal with special problems and circumstances as they come up. In nearly every instance, the Republican legislature, protected by gerrymandering and permanent job security for over a decade, refused. They would simply send one or two people into the Assembly and Senate chambers to bang the gavel and say, "We're now starting the special session." And they'd bang the gavel again and say, "That's the end of the special session." And they would do nothing. And now Governor Evers is asking the Joint Finance Committee, that very powerful group of assembly representatives and state senators who write the state budget, not the whole legislature, just the Joint Finance Committee, to come in today and start to allocate that money to clean up the water that's been contaminated by PFAS. I would not necessarily hold my breath waiting for the Joint Finance Committee to show up at the Capitol today and do something productive. Now, the Democratic members of the Joint Finance Committee, we know, will be at the Capitol today and wanting to get something done. And they have scheduled a press conference for the weirdly specific time of 9:31 a.m., which tells me, I don't have the agenda in front of me, but I get the sense the Joint Finance Committee is supposed to meet at 9:30. And so if they're scheduling a news conference for 9:31, I think that kind of gives away what we think Republicans are going to end up doing on this call for a special session on this extremely important issue. Unfortunately, I think once again, we're going to see a lack of action and continue to see Republicans choosing to protect polluters over cleaning up our drinking water. One more note from state headlines to share, and we've talked about the changing positions of Senate candidate Eric Hovde since he last ran in 2012 for a seat in the U.S. Senate. He has modified his position on abortion from being totally opposed to being much more outspoken about favoring exceptions for rape and incest. He has also called for a public referendum. And he says women should have a choice early on in pregnancy, but he refuses to say at what point he believes women should then lose that right. He'd rather leave that up to the voters. Well, it appears that Eric Hovde's also changed his stance on green energy tax credits to a degree. An article in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel yesterday makes note that back in 2012, Eric Hovde said he was, quote, wholeheartedly opposed to tax credits for green energy. He has since softened that stance because the bank that he owns in California now has a solar finance division that is committed to funding more than $200 million in commercial solar projects annually and points to credits in President Joe Biden's Inflation Reduction Act. So again, he was against the green economy until he was for the tax credits. The Midwest Farm Report is next, followed by Hans Breitenmoser. You're up north. Just had to make sure to subject Luke Mathers to the stylings of David Soul. And Rob writes in from Tigerton, where I forgot to mention earlier, he said it was partly cloudy and 41, but that he loved that David Soul song. Brings back memories of junior high and his first dance with a girl back in the late 70s, back when they had school dances.
I have no idea who this artist is.
You don't. You don't know Starsky and Hutch. You don't know David Soul. I die a little.
I know who Starsky and Hutch is, but like not the original.
No, you don't. Well, like, the remake, right?
Yeah, that's what I know. Sorry.
That's okay. Again, it's just us, you know, early Gen Xers and late baby boomers who are like, oh God, that song is back. Why? Anyway, this is all just prelude to talk to our friend Hans Breitenmoser, a dairy farmer from up in Lincoln County, and getting set to talk a little bit about the importance of exports and the way that we get our products to market. Hans, good morning. How are you?
David Soul, really? I mean, I had Led Zeppelin bring me in one day, and now we're at David Soul
You never know.
I just play what's on the sheet, Hans. I've got no control over it. He picks all the tunes.
Oh man, my sister had a crush on David Soul way back in the day, but please let's move on from that.
I promise. Okay, here we go. So it's April 16th. We don't have like still 3 feet of snow on the ground or anything like that. But I'm sure that doesn't mean you're doing a lot of field work yet.
Well, you know, we are up in Lincoln County, Wisconsin. So it takes a little longer for us up here. But we're getting real close. We're getting equipment ready, and things have dried out quite a bit the last couple of days. We're supposed to get some rain tomorrow, which I would be happy with because we still need some moisture in the soil. So, but we're getting there.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Especially with, like I said, the rain that we're getting. Now, again, this might be different in southern Wisconsin later today, but the pace at which we've gotten, you know, rain and the late season snow has been overall, you know, good for the soil moisture without overdoing it. So, again, nothing lasts, but at the moment, does it feel rather Goldilocks-ish out there?
Knock
on wood.
It is my right and my duty to complain about the weather, but I'm feeling pretty good about it. I mean, it has come in, you know, kind of good soakers and so forth. So it's, I think it's soaked in. We needed it and we're getting it. And hopefully we get a little bit more before we really need to get out there and get seed in the ground.
That's right. And now, look, if things go well, then what you could have is a situation where, like in other years past, the state's farmers could export some $4 billion worth of agricultural and food products. Wisconsin sends products to 142 different countries. You know, there's cheese, obviously, ginseng, cranberries, grains to places like China, Japan, Korea, of course, Canada and Mexico. American farmers overall, they export about 2 billion bushels of corn and about 2 billion bushels of soybeans annually. They put that out there into the global market. And those sales to other countries put money in the pockets of our farmers. Unless, of course, you've got some kind of a trade war going on, like what Donald Trump did with China, which, you know, put farmers in a place that was not of their asking, Hans. And I don't know that, you know, how much you recall or thought about what Trump was doing at the time. But it's going to lead us into some comments by Derek Van Orden, who's critical that we're supplying farm products to China. And I guess what I'm getting at is I'm just not sure that people appreciate the importance of these export markets to Wisconsin farmers.
Oh, I don't think people do necessarily understand the fact that, you know, trade is very important. And when you're the United States, being able to sell ag products is very, very important because, you know, you've got manufacturing, of course. And we need to make sure that our manufacturing sectors are in good shape and they've got products to export as well. But the reality is that ag exports are huge. And if you want to really have a trade imbalance, cut off our ability to sell agricultural products. And that's a real fast way to do it.
Yeah. And that's what made it so curious when Derek Van Orden made some comments a couple weeks back now, 3-4 weeks ago, about a proposal that would have increased exports of food directly, not just financial aid to other countries to purchase food, but to directly export products. And as the proposal was being discussed in committee, here is a clip of Congressman Derek Van Orden, who sits on the House Agriculture Committee, talking in a way that basically sounds like he wants to close off the export market of China to Wisconsin farmers. Give a listen.
Do you think the United States of America should be feeding Nazi Germany in 1938 before their invasion of Poland in 1939? Should we be providing them with food and aid?
Well, and bringing it up to, you want to talk about China today on that, or?
Well,
you want to talk about Nazi
Germany?
I want
to highlight the fact that right now we are essentially feeding Nazi Germany in 1938, and do you think that that's an appropriate use of American resources? Would it have been then, and is it now with China? Because that's where we're at with China. We're in 1938.
I want to sell.
They haven't invaded Poland yet, but it's on the horizon.
I want to sell as much as we can. We know the demand for protein around the world is continuing to grow at a rapid rate, whether it's India, China, or throughout the developing world in Africa and the Middle East.
I understand my time has expired. I just want to tell you that if I had the choice to sell food and give aid to Hitler in 1938, I would not have done so.
This is, Hans, a conflation of epic proportions, it seems to me. What are your thoughts when you first hear that from Wisconsin's lone member on the House Agriculture Committee?
Well, I think Wisconsin needs to change it up a little bit maybe and elect some different folks to represent us in Washington. And I think with all due respect to Mr. Van Orden, he maybe needs to have spent a little more time in history class than what he did, because I mean, it's apples and oranges. I don't understand how you make those types of connections. I really don't.
No. Well, again, you've got people, look, for all of the nice things that have been said about Mike Gallagher on his pending resignation from Congress, the fact of the matter remains that he was a saber rattler toward China. It seems to be an easy thing for Republicans to do right now, but it's another thing to actually put that into action and the price tag that it comes with. I mean, China is Wisconsin's third largest international customer, $324 million in sales last year, largely through the purchase of soybeans and pork. And it's not clear if Van Orden is advocating just like a halt to all U.S. exports to China, and if so, where American farmers would go with a massive glut of unsold commodities, according to some media reports. And during the trade war with China that Trump, you know, put in place, there was financial aid that was given to farmers to make up for the loss of export markets. But that only helps you in that particular year when China came back online. You know, Hans, who's to say they couldn't just look at American farmers and go, well, you guys are unreliable. Brazil's having a good harvest, and so we're going to get our soybeans from Brazil from now on. I mean, that's the real world of global markets.
Yeah, and that's actually sort of what happened. And, you know, the other interesting thing is that, you know, I think we've got a much more accurate analogy in the Russia invading Ukraine situation. But for some reason, that seems to be lost on the same politicians that are so worried about selling agricultural products to China. So I if you're asking me if I understand this, I'm sorry, I don't. ag exports are so important, and I'm glad you brought up ginseng, because in our area, and just sort of a little bit to the south of me, but you know, ginseng is one of those crops too. We can't. There's no way on earth that the United States can consume our way out of the amount of ginseng that's produced right here in central Wisconsin, north central Wisconsin. Those products have been exported for the entirety of their history of being grown here. It has consistently brought money into this area. And so to have such an antagonistic relationship with our trade partners doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense. I think we have to hold authoritarian, regimes to account when we're having trade conversations. Absolutely, we should. But we also have to remember how much diplomacy comes from having a good trade relationship as well.
Right, because if you remove the trade, you remove some of your leverage. And I'm old enough to remember that all through, especially the late 70s, when Russia did not have nearly the agricultural advancements that they have now. They were constantly dependent upon grain exports from the United States. And that could be used as leverage in, you know, nuclear arms treaty talks, in other bits of diplomacy. But the moment you say to, you know, an adversary, well, we're not going to help you feed your people anymore, you make it that much tougher to have, you know, diplomatic relationships and try to persuade people to, you know, see things your way.
Absolutely, 100% true. And again, we've got this Russia versus Ukraine situation going on right now. If we want to send a message to authoritarian regimes around the world, the best thing we can do is be real hard-nosed with Russia. That's going to send a bigger signal to China about Taiwan than anything that we would do with regard to cutting off, ag sales to China or slowing them down or impeding them in any way. And China's economy isn't spectacular right now. They're in a world of hurt. And I think that's something I mentioned that for two reasons. Number one is I think there's this narrative that says, you know, constantly that's coming at us from the right that says that China's eating our lunch in every way possible. And that's not necessarily the case. And the other thing is we're dealing with real people in real terms. These are folks, we grow non-GMO soybeans on our farm, and some of those end up going in that direction. And so it's a direct impact. People are trying to feed their families, and I think that's something that we need to be considerate of as well.
Exactly. and I hope that we've helped people, you know, appreciate that it there's a lot more to what happens on Wisconsin farms and export markets and getting these products to these various markets, which takes me into a different subject that I'm kind of springing on you. I'm not expecting you to be an expert on railroads, but I saw this note and I thought this really ties in well with getting products to market, whether you're using Mississippi River barges or freighters across the oceans, but also, you know, railroads. And to me, Hans, it is still amazing that we're still having this conversation, that railroads want to get away with getting rid of two-person train crews and go down to a one-person train crew pretty much no matter how long the train is. And you've seen these trains that are bringing, you know, either egg products or coal or what have you. The Biden administration is finally putting its foot down after all these other administrations and saying, no, this is going to be the rule. You need, at a minimum, a two-person train crew. And yet it looks like four railroads are asking a federal appeals court to throw that out. It just seems like it's going to be one more frustration for farmers if we have to once again worry about things like, you know, either railroad strikes or railroad disruptions because of mishaps.
I'm gonna share a real quick story. A couple of years ago, I was at the National Farmers Union fly-in in Washington, D.C., and one of the meetings that I was in was this group of farmers, and there was a bunch of grain farmers from out west. And these are big, burly guys with big hats on, and it looks like a pretty conservative group. And they were complaining about how the rail system in this country has gotten so consolidated. So it's only owned by a handful of very rich people. Mm-hmm. And these farmers are really having a struggle getting their grain to the elevators and from the elevators and shipped out of where and going where it needs to go because of how consolidated and profit driven it is. And I'm thinking, well, maybe we should, you know, socialize the trains in this country like they do in so many other countries. And I couldn't believe my ears when one of those big burly cowboy hatted guys said exactly that to that group, saying, why is this privatized? We should have this should be like the highways. And I was surprised to hear him say that.
Well, that's very reminiscent of the talk, you know, a century ago with prairie populism and leading to the progressivism. But sometimes folks have to have something happen to them directly before they stop waving that socialist flag and understand the ways that government policy can work for everybody all together. Hans Breitenmoser, thanks so much. Always great to visit with you. Have a great day.
Thanks a lot, Pat. Take care.
Chad Holmes is coming up next. You're up north. And wisdom of Chad Holmes will be shared with a radio audience across the Wausau area in mere minutes on Bull Falls Radio. You can also catch it on the Civic Media app. If you haven't downloaded it yet, don't make me turn Luke Mathers loose on you. Luke, what would you tell people who don't have the Civic Media app downloaded yet?
That they need to go to wherever apps are downloaded. It's free. It's easy. Just type in Civic Media in your app store and put it on your phone. And Chad, I don't know if I've ever told you this in person or not, but you have probably the best intro song across the entire network. I listen to almost all of the programming, and hats off to you, Chad. I'm a big fan of
this
your intro.
Stevie Ray Vaughan coming in second to Phil Collins. I'm not sure how I feel about this at all.
Who said
congratulations?
Who said you were second?
But now I have to get the rest of the 2 hours to that level. I start with one, the first 45.
What do you say? It only goes down from there?
And then it's like, it goes right down the drain. So I got to pick it. I got to maintain that level.
We're going to agree to disagree on this one.
Not just the best intro, but the best show. Now,
this
that's
is a high quality program that you get from Mr. Holmes every weekday. From 8 until 10, but beyond the talk show, also the high school sports. You are both hither and yon. Hither and yon are not in the same conference, which is why he has to travel so far between them. You're still doing a lot of that this week?
Yeah, still doing that, dodging any of this rain that we're hearing about today. But it's actually fun in the spring, because in the winter, I'm either on a hockey arena or in a gym, and it's nice to be outside. Like yesterday was such a beautiful day. To be outside broadcasting was fantastic. So after a long winter, and even this winter wasn't so bad, but you're still indoors the entire time, to be outside and doing some sports, it's a lot of fun.
Here's a question that occurs to me for all the high school sports that you have to do, and do it over years. And so you see the crowds at all these schools, and you see the parents and the supporters and everything else. And I am not going to put you in a corner and make you give specifics. I just want to ask, from somebody with the experience level you have, are there places, either a school with a particular sport or something like that, where you really look forward because they are just such good, keyed in, positive fans? They recognize you when you come in and they're nice. Or conversely, is there a place where you're like, oh, why do I have to go there? These guys are always the stereotypes exist for a reason for some of these bad fans. Do you have anything like that? Or is it kind of even keeled throughout your travels? And again, you don't have to give any specifics.
It's there are some areas that just have more, you call it juice. Where you go in and you just feel the energy, and that's what you want. You want to be able to feel the energy, and I don't think there's any, you call them bad fans, where they're riding the officials or riding the opponents. I have not seen that, but there are some places where you go in there and you just feel like, hey, this, it feels bigger. It just feels like, hey, these, you know, usually it's places that have had a run of success and they have had, you know, I think more big games. But where you go to a place where it just feels like, man, there's a juice there. There's an energy, and it can't help but affect you. And I think hopefully bring you to a higher level as well. And also the place I kind of like going to is, because all these years I've been doing, for the most part, a lot of Wausau West and Newman Catholic games. And but I went to school at DC Everest here, so it's always fun to go back to Everest. And if I run into people that I went to school with, I had this one story where I went to lunch with my mom and my sister one day. My sister went to Everest too, and a friend of hers and the friend's mom came in and came to our table, and it was the night after West had played Everest in football. And I wear a West shirt when I go and do a game. And this, the mother goes, how could you wear that shirt? You went to DC Everest and you're wearing a Wausau West shirt at DC Everest. I said, hey, I got a check I need to pick up every other week.
Yes, yes.
But it's always fun to go back where I went to school, and even though I don't call the games for them per se.
Mm-hmm. I haven't asked Luke about this. I have said that my one or two extremely limited experiences doing high school sports play-by-play were not something you would put in the, you know, the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association Hall of Fame. Mr. Mathers, have you given that a go?
I have not given play-by-play a go, but for a really long time, all throughout, I think late middle school, all throughout high school, and then a little bit in college, I used to be a baseball umpire in the summers. So it was a way that I would pay. So I got to be part of the call in a different way, not necessarily the broadcast call, but calling balls and strikes.
Along that line, back when I was in high school, I did little league umpiring. And there was one game where I missed a call. It was a play at the plate, and the throw came in. It was a little high. The kid slid under it, and I made the call too quickly, and I caught him out. And after you know, a few minutes, you start thinking about it in your head, I was a little too quick on it. But these parents kept riding me. And then I finally turned around and I said, if you don't be quiet, I'm leaving right now. I don't need this. You guys said take over yourself, because I am not going to sit here for the next four innings and keep on hearing you ride me for that one call. And in the end, after again taking time, and I thought, I probably missed it. But at the same time, it's like, enough is enough.
Oh, I've had the opposite experience, Chad, where I've almost thrown some of those adults out. I looked at the parents and I said, if you got a problem, I'm gonna send you to the parking lot, kind of vibe.
I like this. I thought the segment begins asking Chad about any bad crowds. Oh no, nothing like that. But we knew it.
Literally, it's a completely different story, Pat.
I never thought of it until he brought that. It's like, holy cow! Now I'll never forget that one. That was. I'd rather broadcast an umpire, that's for sure.
Yep. So you've had in Wausau a changing of the guard with a new mayor coming on board. So are you expecting, I don't know if you've spoken with the new mayor yet, or if you're expecting any significant noteworthy changes in Wausau with a new mayor and council?
Well, there's obviously going to be changes. I think it's going to be very interesting. The thing about it, even beyond some of the meat and potatoes aspects of the job, it's going to be the tone. And I do think that, I mean, obviously, Mayor Katie Rosenberg was such a positive force. And I know that in some respects, there were those who were politically maybe on the other side that felt as though sometimes she was out there too much. I'm curious to see what the tone is going to be for the new mayor, that if he's truly going to. And again, I worry a little bit that some of the people that deserve to be called out won't get called out. But again, my experiences with the new mayor have been positive experiences. And my expectation is he's going to be on this program answering my questions, as he has in the run-up as well. But it's going to be interesting to see the tone. I'm really curious about that.
We will follow that as well and appreciate you keeping us updated. Chad Holmes coming up next on Bull Falls Radio. Thank you, sir. Have a great day.
Thank you, guys.
Mr. Mathers, good to see you.
Great to
have
see you,
have a wonderful
Pat.
Day.
You too.
Thanks for filling in. And Greg Bach will be back here tomorrow morning here on Up North News Radio, brought to you by Courier, a pro-democracy news network building a more informed, engaged, and representative America. Have a great day. See you tomorrow.